I walked away without my glasses. I keep doing that.
Do you need reading glasses?
Okay, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order here at 9 o'clock, and please ask you to stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So this is the joint SLOCOG RTA board meeting, and I'm the immediate past president.
Welcome back.
You're not so immediate. And so we're going to do a roll call.
Roll call for joint session. Board member Bright.
Here.
Board member Gibson.
Here.
Board member Guthrie.
Here.
Board member Moreno.
Here.
Board member Ortiz Legg.
Here.
Board member Paulding.
Here.
Board member Pease.
Here.
Board member Marianne Rees.
Here.
Board member past president Bichon.
Here.
Board member Strong.
Here.
Board member Wixom.
Here.
Board member Arnold. Vice President Arnold. Board member ex officio Scott Eads.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So with that, we are going to go to public comment. I'd like to instruct members of the public who wish to speak to please state their name clearly and slowly before speaking. Up first, all the way from the city of Atascadero, thank you, Mr. Greening, for braving the weather to be here today. Mr. Eric Greening.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening. Was that slow enough?
And, perfecto.
I would like to thank all of you for braving the weather and for caring enough to be here. I am sure that every single one of you in your primary role and responsibility in your jurisdiction has been dealing overtime with emergency situations these last couple of days, and you are probably all exhausted, and you are here, and you recognize the importance of being here, so I just want to say thank you for that. I also want to thank the people in both agencies, now that you're wearing both hats, SLOCOG and SLORTA, for your heroic efforts to prevent the U.S. Census Bureau from de-designating us in such a way that would have done massive harm to public transit, to the people who work in public transit and the people who depend on public transit for being where they need to be. And I'm one of them. I wouldn't be here without public transit. So thanks to both entities for everything you have done to try to convince the U.S. Census Bureau to be sensible. It appears they have been sensible. We have three urbanized areas in this county, and we can look forward, instead of how are we going to negotiate massive cuts and layoffs and all of those unspeakables, we can actually look forward to how are we going to maintain and improve the service. And I look forward to working with you on exactly that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on items not on today's agenda? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Bring it back to the board here, where we're going to welcome new board members. So welcome new board members to the board. And also, we had election of officers, and most of those officers are actually not here. So we had supposed to open it up the meeting to nominations and then for the SLOCOG RTA board president. And I think, do we still need to run through that? We do.
Yes, it would be helpful.
Okay, so is there a nomination to nominate Debbie Arnold as president of the board?
I'll so do.
I will second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Heather Moreno. Any discussion? Do I need to do public comment on this?
Technically, yes.
Okay, so is there any public comment on this nomination? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Bring it back to the board for any discussion. Seeing none, then we have a motion and a second, and we'll ask for a roll call vote.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Board Member Strong.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie.
Yes.
Board Member Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Board Member Paulding.
Yes.
Board Member Pease.
Yes.
Board Member Reese.
Yes.
Board Member Past President Pichon.
Yes.
Board Member Wixom.
Yes.
It passed.
Okay. Congratulations to Supervisor Debbie Arnold, who will be the president of the organization for the next year. With that, I would also now ask for any nominations, because the president is supposed to do this, but are there nominations for the SLOCOG RTA board vice president? Mr. Paulding.
Chair, I'd like to nominate Board Member Pease.
Board Member Pease.
Second.
There's a second by Supervisor Gibson. Okay. Is there any other nominations? Seeing none, we'll close nominations here and ask if there's any public comment. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Any comments before we go to a vote? Council Member Pease.
We're wearing a lot of hats right now.
That's all right.
Thank you very much for this nomination. I really look forward to serving in this capacity. Should I be elected, I think we have some really important and critical work for both RTA and SLOCOG, pivotal in the RTA sector in both bringing up and accelerating our ridership and meeting those challenges, and SLOCOG with an increasing role for housing and even broadband and prioritizing projects and being creative in getting those funded and moving forward. So thank you.
And you did say if you're elected. Okay,
it's gonna be
close here. So we will go to a roll call vote on the nomination of Andy Pease to be vice president.
Board Member Paulding.
Yes.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie.
Yes.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Board Member Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Board Member Pease.
Yes.
Board Member Reese.
Yes.
Past President Pichon.
Yes.
Board Member Strong.
Yes.
Board Member Wixom.
Yes.
The motion carried.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you.
So, I am supposed to now confirm the assignment of President, Vice President, Past President as members of the Executive Committee. So does that need a motion to do that? So is there a motion to approve the President, Vice President, and Past President, not me, by the way, as members of the Executive Committee?
So moved.
So moved?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Gibson. So we have a motion and second. Any discussion? Any questions? Seeing none, is there any public comment? Close public comment, bring it back to the board. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we will go to a roll call vote.
Voice vote.
Voice vote.
Voice vote.
Voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Congratulations. So I'm also supposed to present a plaque of appreciation and a bus stop sign to outgoing President Ed Waage. So we do have a plaque. We will make sure that Mr. Waage gets that. Also to Supervisor Lynn Compton, who has left this board. So we thank Lynn for her service too. And to Mayor John Heading, which we have here. So we want to thank them all for their service to these two committees. Okay.
Public comment
on the recognition of the three members that are outgoing. I see none. I will close public comment. Is that okay, John? We're good. All right. We've closed public comment. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, we're moving on. So we are now going to adjourn the SLOCOG board meeting to the SLOCOG board meeting. And I will call that meeting to order. And we will do another roll call vote for the SLOCOG board meeting.
Board Member Bright.
Here.
Board Member Gibson.
Here.
Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Board Member Moreno.
Here.
Board Member Ortiz Legg.
Here.
Board Member Paulding.
Here.
Board Member Pease.
Here.
Past President Pichon.
Here.
Board Member Strong.
Here.
Board Member Reese.
Here.
Board Member Wixom.
Here.
President Arnold. Board Member Scott Eads, ex officio.
We have quorum. Okay. Thank you. Nobody left, so thank you very much for staying. We'll go to public comment now today on items not on the agenda. Mr. Greening, would you like to speak on this item?
I already gave a public comment. I think my next one will be on the minutes.
Got it. Okay. We will close public comment then if I don't see anybody else coming forward for public comment not on today's agenda. And we are going to invite Mr. Rogers to comment on the item, the next item, presentation, but we've already got through those.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to make a couple comments about Mr. Tim Gubbins, who retired about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And we have a plaque for him. You know, several times when we have meetings, we have a very empty room. But you might remember 12 or 13 years ago when we had a chip seal project in Cambria, and the type of rocks they put on the shoulder were very sharp, and people were getting flat tires, and it was, you know, we had a full room here, you know, and it'll happen with El Campo, or it'll happen with 227. It's either nobody comes or everybody comes. And that's about the time where Tim stepped in and replaced the prior district director. And that was really a welcome solution, and the way they grinded down the shoulder to make it more acceptable to cyclists. And I have to say that, you know, when I first became the director of Slocog about 3.5 years ago, Tim was one of the first people to call me up and say, hey, let's go for a coffee or a beer and make sure everything, you know, we're on the same page with everything. And being who I am, I said, okay, let's get a beer, you know. And we've always had a very open, direct relationship. You know, we agree on probably 95% of issues. And so it's been great. You know, Tim has a great statewide reputation. You may remember when the Pfeiffer Bridge went out in Big Sur, and that was replaced in record speed. You may remember the debris flow in Montecito when the road was shut down for, I don't know, 10 days. Coming up with solutions to fix that rapidly. So we're really losing a statewide professional, well-known statewide and probably nationally for the things he's accomplished. So I just wanted to start with that. I don't know if there's any other board members that wanted to say a good word about Tim.
So we'll go and see if there's any. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Indeed, I would like to thank Tim. He's been through quite a lot just within the second supervisorial district, not to mention the entirety of Caltrans District 5, which stretches an extraordinary distance along our coast. But I want to thank you as regards the aforementioned chip seal issue. Mr. Gubbins was here when a whole new breed of community activists was born. I want to thank you for your good nature, your openness, your accessibility, your willingness to discuss that matter, which did end up, I think, with a remarkable solution in a timely fashion. I would also note that it was my pleasure to stand with you at the opening of the realignment of Highway 1, 3 miles of remarkable new road that is actually known throughout the state as a sea level rise adaptation project, a cooperative project with both the local government and some of your friends within state agencies, such as the Coastal Commission, which is going to provide an extraordinary amenity once that coastal trail gets developed along the old right-of-way. So, sir, it's been a pleasure. Wish you the very best in your next phase, and enjoyed my time serving with you, sir.
Outstanding. Mayor Moreno.
Yeah, so clearly Tim has been there for the big things. And I wanted to say we had a particular issue in Atascadero several months ago that we had a hard time getting traction on. I called and I left Tim a voicemail at 3 p.m. on a Friday thinking, you know, hopefully he gets back to me early next week. He called me within 30 minutes on a Friday afternoon. And we got that issue resolved quite quickly. And so thank you, Tim, for your responsiveness and concerns for things large and small. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Mr. Strong.
Thank you. And Tim, I want to thank you, too, for being so responsive and so open to public meetings and also individual meetings. In my roles in transportation, locally, state, federal, you were always there to talk to. You were always cooperative and recognized where our place is in the entire United States. And it's a very important one, and you've handled it excellently. And I thank you for your service. Wish you well.
Supervisor.
Thank you. Tim, I want to recognize your leadership. And prior to being a supervisor, you know, I worked for the utility in right away. And just between that and this role, the fact that you have demonstrated a continual improvement of staff being more flexible, trying to find solutions, getting to the yes, I think is just so critical for a large behemoth organization like Caltrans. And I just want to thank you for demonstrating that kind of leadership. And it has permeated down through the ranks and continue to see improvements. Thank you. Congratulations and good enjoy.
Great. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Tim, could you come on up here? I want to present you with this plaque on behalf of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. It hereby recognizes your leadership and service as an ex officio board member from July 2012 through December 2022. Congratulations, and we'll take a photo. We'll squeeze all together. So everybody, we got a lot of people, but let's squeeze it together. Oh, she's profiling.
Come on.
It's really hard not to.
Here we go.
Is that ready? 1, 2, 3.
Tim, if you'd like to say something with the microphone, okay. I'll give you. Yeah. No, I'm not going to give it to Murphy, but I'll give it to you.
Thank you all for the very kind words. It's been a long, great career with Caltrans. As you all know, it's been a little over 10 in this role, grand total of 35 here with Caltrans in town. I was a little surprised when Pete started with the chip seal, but looking back on that with the other project that Supervisor Gibson mentioned that we then realigned the highway, I consider the chip seal a success because it was within a year that we went for a coastal permit. We actually had an appeal that we had to appear before the state. And some of the bicycle advocates who we got to know very well showed up in support of Caltrans. And for the first time in a year, I heard them say, "We have nothing to add after Caltrans." So. And so it was just because they knew what we were doing, we knew what they needed and all that, and it was just the communication and it was the listening. So I think with most of your jurisdictions, we've had some issues. I've always appreciated the frankness with which the board members relayed those to me, but I would just ask in weeks like this, please thank your public works staff. I'm guessing they haven't been home in a long time, or maybe they're just getting home now, but with all the things happening right now, we all share that, and we all share that public service. So thank you for the recognition.
Thank you. Mr. Rogers?
Yeah, let me start on Rich here just a little bit. He wiggled out of a resolution because our bylaws say that in 30 years you give a staff member a resolution, but I guess we gave him a resolution at 25 years, so he wiggled out of that. But Rich is highly to blame that you have me as the SLOCOG executive director, because 32 years ago, he called me up. We were classmates at Cal Poly, and I had just returned from several years in Peace Corps, and he said, there's a job for you in San Luis Obispo that's perfect for you. And so I came up, and I competed for the job, and I got the job, and I haven't been able to leave. Largely due to Rich's good work in the programming side. You know, he's a programming savant in the project development world of knowing 40 different funding sources and the nuances and how to get a project built. So I just want to say thanks, Rich. You really make us a great agency working for all the local jurisdictions. So thanks a lot.
Any board comments? Seeing none, we'll go to public comment. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Rich, would you come on up and to the podium? And I'd like to present with you this plaque, hereby recognizing your leadership and service as programming director and planner from December 1992 through December 2022. So come on up, we'll take a photo.
Thank you for your
hard work. You're not retiring, right? You're here. Come in, Andy. I'm crunching down.
Okay, everybody ready? 1, 2, 3.
Thank you.
Rich, microphone is yours.
We're not going to do that.
Thank you, Pete. That was very kind. We all know that this job in this profession, Tim knows this, takes quite a bit of patience and humility, and it's more than just an individual. It takes a team to deliver these projects, and I've had the good fortune for as long as I've been working here to work with a lot of great people at SLOCOG and a lot of excellent delegates here representing your community. So we're all on the same page, which is improving and making our quality of life as best as we can and are able to. If this is like a baseball game, I think I'm in my, every year is three innings, so this is the 10th inning. So games go extra innings, right? So this isn't retirement, but still throwing the pitches and still swinging at the ball and trying to hit some home runs from time to time. So thank you very much. Appreciate
Yay.
It.
Thank you. Thank you very much for those concise words. Okay, we're going to now move on to the next item, which is it's a voice vote on board minutes from December 7th, 2022. So I'll see if there is a motion to approve the board minutes, and then I'll go to public comment.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Mr. Paulding. Comment, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Yes. Before you,
you had changes.
Amending this motion a bit.
Okay.
I believe Ida has received these corrections, but I will run them by you. And if you agree, okay. On page 4-7, the last sentence on F3, I'm not opposed to all cap and trade climate money, but I want it to be effective. So the last sentence would be struck and replaced with, it is time to remove projects with no near-term prospect of attaining emissions reductions from the climate fund, which of course the high-speed rail is such a project. Hugely emissive, not going to keep airplanes out of the sky, doesn't deserve climate money. That money would be better distributed fairly around the state for climates that do, I mean for projects that do. And then a small correction also on page 4-8. Between the and treatment, insert the word unequal. And again, Ida has that. So if you're cool with that, I would request an amendment to your motion. Otherwise, the minutes are extremely thorough and excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll close public comment. Bring it back, Mr. Pauling.
I'd be happy to amend my motion. And again, thank you, Mr. Greening, for how much attention to detail and that you have and participation in the meeting. So I'd like to make those two changes to the minutes as a modification of my motion. Thank you.
And the second will accept.
Okay. Any further discussion from the board? This is a voice vote, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The ayes have it. Motion passes. Thank you very much. We're now moving on to the interagency assignments. Mr. Rogers.
Yes, we have five functions that we participate with our adjacent agencies and statewide agencies. It's CALCOG, the National Association of Regional Councils, LOSAN, our rail provider, and the Coast Rail Coordinating Council. And then with our Central Coast Coalition, we have a lobby day. And the issues that CALCOG deal with are all the current issues that your cities are dealing with and the regions are dealing with, whether it's the Air Resources Board and just making sure that the state doesn't have one-size-fits-all policies. And in this committee, Fred has been a leader for us, and he continues to be on the executive committee there. So we're hoping to retain him there. There is an annual leadership forum in Riverside that's coming up, and we'd like even a couple more board members to come to that if possible. They need the participation. On the next committee, with the National Association of Regional Councils, Fred and I are booked and ready to go to Washington, D.C. in about 10 days. Fortunately, the big fight we're planning to have with the census doesn't have to happen. We think we're safe there. We have some alternates that we recommend, Don Ortiz Legg and Jimmy Paulding, to continue as alternates. There's still a lot of new programs coming out of the Fed. It seems like a new one comes out all the time. And Fred and I will be heading to Michigan, Detroit in June for that. Our rail group will continue the same. Unfortunately, rail services are shut down right now. There's a bridge out in Vandenberg. It's probably going to be down for about 3 weeks. We're not going to have LOSAN service to the south. And the Coast Starlight has also been held in Oakland with some washouts. And they don't have servicing further south than Oakland. So we'll probably just have intercity coach, motor coach options to get to Oakland if you want to take the Coast Starlight further north. We're recommending retaining our existing representatives there. And then on the Coast Rail Group, this is bigger than LOSAN. It sort of includes the LOSAN representatives and people to the north to try and gain a better rail services north of San Luis Obispo. And then finally, we have the Central Coast Coalition Legislative Day. We do have a date scheduled for that, and we are planning to be in person in Sacramento on March 15th. Typically, we'll invite the president. So we'll have Debbie Arnold invited, as well as the CALCOG rep, and Jimmy Paulding as a second alternate. So this is just a proposed slate. Feel free to make adjustments to this. Just for simplicity, I thought I'd put this out instead of trying to go through each one.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rogers. Are there any questions or comments on the presentation? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to public comment and see if there's any public comment on this item. Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board for any additional questions, comments, and or a motion.
I'll just make one comment thanking Fred for all the work that you do advocating for our region at that level, and happy to move approval of the staff recommendation.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Ortiz Legg. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further comments or questions? We will go to a roll call vote then.
Board Member Paulding.
Yes.
Board Member Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie.
Yes.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Past President Pichon.
Yes.
Board Member Strong.
Yes.
Board Member Reese.
Yes.
Board Member Wixom.
Yes.
Vice President Andy Pease.
Yes.
Motion carried.
All right, motion passes. Thank you very much. Moving on now to public hearings, transportation, and presentation items on our agenda. This is item B1, which is the 2023 Federal Transportation Improvement Program, FTIP, Amendment Number 2. With that, we're going to ask Mr. DeNunzio to present the item.
There it is.
With visuals, Mr. DeNunzio.
Okay, good morning, Chair. John DeNunzio, SLOCOG staff, here to present the Amendment Number 2 to the 2023 Federal Transportation Improvement Program. Right, the FTIP is our federally funded and regionally significant projects. It's a four-year document. We update it every 2 years. RTP, air quality, conformity, consistency. This document has to be fiscally constrained, and so we do a public hearing anytime there's a change with the finances to this document. The document also is right constrained fiscal years 22-23 through the 25-26 year. We have 77 projects and group projects in the program, and they're federal, state, and local funding of approximately $592 million in the 4 years. So more information can be found on slocog.org on the funding page. In this amendment, we bring in an additional $96.2 million. Here's just a quick snapshot graphic. This is a two-year tool that we use when we talk to local agencies to keep track and communicate some of our major regional, state, and federal grant opportunities within the two-year FTIP federal program. But this morning, we're here to talk about a significant amendment to the Regional Transportation Program, and with your vote today to accept the final construction funding provided by the state of California to our region for the state Route 4641Y project. These are some of the details of the amendment. We're increasing construction funding by $60.2 million from the STIP program, and this is for fiscal year 22-23, so this is coming up. And that also includes some of our RIP funds, $2.5 to $4 million. So that's an increase of $1.5 million from our board. But overall, this is a 60% increase in the construction funding, and you can see the totals amount for this fix is $206 million. Over the past two decades, significant investment and progress has made to convert these 60 miles of two-lane conventional highway into a four-lane expressway between Highway 101 and Interstate 5 to enhance safety, mobility, and reliability for users. And currently, there are 20 miles of the total 30 miles are now completed in SLO County. And with the funding secured from state sources for construction in 22-23, the next 5 miles, the Y segment at Junction Highway 4146, be complete. Now, these efforts have been culminating for many years. Hundreds of individuals, political advocates, staff, construction crews, over a great many years, fixed the 46 effort to get to this point. And today, we are here in terms of completing the funding package. Once complete, the upgraded facility will eliminate the conflict points with heavy traffic left turn crossing movements from the eastbound 46 onto the northbound 41. Here's a graphic depicting the realignment of the James Dean Memorial Junction. And finally, since 1955, 68 years later, the solution will improve safety by replacing the existing at-grade intersection with a grade-separated structure. Here's an overview of the construction schedule with today's FTIP amendment approval. Caltrans will be able to start construction in March of this year, 2023, and the new interchange will be active by December 2024. Okay. So that's the why. Additionally, in this FTIP, we're bringing in four active transportation projects totaling $36 million. Each one of these projects is right-sized for their community, that where they're going to be built. Halcyon Road Complete Streets, $8.1 million. Morabeta Cayucas Connector, $7.4 million. South Hygera Complete Streets, $6.9 million. Niblick Road, $13.8 million. So all five of these projects in Amendment 2 demonstrate progress towards the safety performance measure, the PM1, required by the feds and the state. And that concludes the presentation on this item. Staff recommends adopting the resolution approving Amendment Number 2 to the 2023 FDIP.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Bring it back to the board. Mr. Rogers?
I just wanted to add, since Tim is still here, this was really Tim's bottom of the ninth grand slam home run to pull in this $60 million in front of the California Transportation Commission. You know, they're fairly ministerial if it's less than a 20% increase, but this was a 60% increase and a lot of money. So we were really a victim of supply chain issues and some minor realignments. So thank you again, Tim. It's really leaving his mark in this county in a big way and intergenerationally, as you see behind me.
Intergenerational. Love that. All right, bring it back to the board then for any questions we might have. For Mr. Annunzio? No questions. We'll go to public comment. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. Bring it back to the board for any other comments and or a motion.
I will happily move approval.
And second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we are going to go to a roll call vote.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Board Member Strong.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie.
Yes.
Board Member Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Board Member Paulding.
Yes.
Past President Pichon.
Yes.
Board Member Reese.
Yes.
Board Member Wixom.
Yes.
Vice President Peace.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. It's a big one.
That's a very
Thank
big
you, Mr.
One.
Govins, for your help. All right, moving on to item B2, supplemental funding assessment request for proposals. Mr. Worthley.
Members of the board, good morning. I'm James Worthley, SLOCOG staff. Item B2 before you is the supplemental funding assessment request for proposals. Now, you might recall about a year ago, we were putting together this fiscal year's overall work program, 2022-23 overall work program, and we included an item, a work element, to develop an RFP and contract to conduct public poll assessment and its results. Last month, the steering committee for the RTP sent to you a letter, and you agreed to put it into the draft RTP as the foreword, in which we would explore the feasibility and necessary path to secure support from voters for a transportation-specific measure similar to those that exist in 25 other regions in California, including Monterey, Santa Cruz, and Santa Barbara. For us, it would raise nearly $1 billion. It would recapture $1 million a year that we do not receive now because we're not self-help region that other regions do get. That is money that comes directly out of SB1. It would improve our competitiveness for those state and federal funds. It would deliver improvements far faster than what we're doing now and assure tourists contribute to the problems that they help create. Now, there are 25 self-help counties currently in California, and in 2016, SLOCOG pursued supplemental funding. Ultimately, placing our first measure on the ballot for voters, we secured 66.3% support, but the measure failed by less than 500 votes. The SLOCOG board then stopped our efforts. SLOCOG has polled three times on this topic over the past 20 years or more, and that just doesn't align with a concerted continuing efforts that are needed for such a measure to be approved. Now, we've seen in the five counties that passed their first measure in 2016 and 2018. They polled often, they hired pollsters, they hired engagement consultants for advice and direction. And they went to the voters three, four, and even five times before they passed their first measure. And when they, at first, they did not succeed, they tried and tried and tried again. And that's what we need to do. We need to have a concerted effort on this. Self-help counties deliver more projects and investments faster and at a lower cost. Now, the steps Simply, engagement's going on right now with the RTP. Staff is going out and talking to community groups, organizations, committees, anyone that will have us to let them know what's in our long-range document and coming in the next 23 years. This polling effort is more of a means of dipping our toe into the water to take the temperature of what voters, what's on the voters' minds right now. Additional efforts would be necessary before we could fully dive into what might be a one-day measure. What this would amount to is 18-minute survey, 600 voters surveyed, 95% confidence level. We would test the concerns, the awareness, the transportation investments, the key issues, and assess the feasibility of the transportation measure and collect demographic data before returning to this board with your thoughts on what the results are in June. Now, if we do find results with strong support from a future poll, what we would then do is draft up an investment plan, eventually a final investment plan. We'd have to shop this around to all the jurisdictions for their approval. We would develop measure safeguards. We'd develop a voter measure for the ballot. And then the voters ultimately decide, and it requires a two-thirds vote to pass a sales tax of this kind. So let's talk of a tale of two regions. Santa Cruz County and San Luis Obispo region are essentially the same in terms of population. They passed their first measure in 2016. It is a half-cent sales tax. It is for 30 years. It is dedicated to transportation projects and programs. Their investment plan identified one category, $118 million alone for active transportation and their coastal trail. For the recent active transportation program, these were all in the FTIP that you just saw that we had, Santa Cruz and Slocog both were awarded four grant awards. Santa Cruz offered up $32 million because they had, again, $118 million set aside from their sales tax. We offered up, or more likely cobbled together, $12 million. We were awarded $36 million, kind of happy with that. Santa Cruz was awarded $115 million in this one program. Now, our long-range plan, looking 23 years out, we're hoping that $184 million will be collected by state, federal, and local sources for our active transportation programs here in our region. Santa Cruz has now secured to spend over the next couple of years $147 million, and that doesn't take into account the $86 million left that they've promised the voters will be for active transportation. I can promise you that $86 million is going to leverage another $100 or $200 or $300 million like they did before. We're falling behind. If we truly want to support or actually deliver our key regional projects, whether it's the Coastal Trail or the Templeton-Atascadero Connector or the emerging needs like 46101 off-ramp or the housing-related transportation improvements, and so much more, we need a better approach to fund these things. We can fund them sooner. We can secure more state funding if we have these funds, and we need to follow this concerted, continuing effort, not start and stop and look back and go, it would have been a better time then. So what we're trying to do now is put together RFP for a scope of work, issue it out, hire a contractor, and get them on board to do a polling this spring. Staff recommendation is to approve the scope of work for polling services and authorize the executive director to hire this contractor not to exceed $50,000. We did receive support from TTAC and CTAC. CTAC didn't have a quorum, but SSTAC and, of course, the RTP steering committee. And that concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much. Any board questions? Seeing none, I believe we're going to go to public comment then. Oh, question? Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wonder if you'd go over what an investment plan is. I think I know what it is, but I...
So with a sales tax such as this, an investment plan is a list of absolute deliverables. It's a contract with the voters promising them we're going to collect this money and these are the things it's going to go to. And within the measure safeguards, it says whether or not the board or the public or anybody can change what those investments are at all or ever or not at all. So it's basically a promise. So For example, the Santa Cruz region has $118 million in their investment plan, promised to the voters to be spent from measure to active transportation.
So the investment plan can be a very general thing, not that they were specifically going to do their coastal trail or...
So it can be, but for example, in Santa Cruz, they said a big chunk of it's going to their coastal trail. So instead of saying, give us the money and we'll spend it where we need it, we're saying, no, a big chunk of this is going on the coastal trail and nobody can change that.
So they had a specific number for a specific project.
Correct. And many projects with many specific numbers or percentages.
So if for instance, you were thinking of road maintenance or something that, as opposed to projects, you would make a general statement about road maintenance? Or?
So road maintenance can be a percentage or a dollar amount, yes.
Okay. All right, thanks.
But I don't think you'll collect any state competitive funds for road maintenance.
Mr. Guthrie, to elaborate a little bit on that, it really depends on how the ballot measure is drafted in terms of what purposes that money can feed into. So that's kind of where that analysis lies, is how the ballot measure is drafted.
And, you know, that's exactly what I was going to highlight, is that understanding that project in nature requires cobbling together funds, as you noted, mm-hmm. and that for the voters to recognize that, such as just what happened with the Y. I really think that was such a significant vote in regards to how long it's taken and how many lives have been compromised at that Y, as well as what it means for our hospitality industry, our agriculture industry, and others, that this is exactly the kind of thing that we can point to as to why we need to perhaps look at this and see what the voters are feeling, but to get that point across. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor?
The results that are expected from the survey, will they be just for the region or municipality, city specific?
For the confidence level of 95%, a high confidence level, it would be at the regional level. We can go down to 600 voters and still have a high confidence region-wide. But then when you get to smaller jurisdictions, you would either need to increase the number of survey respondents to get that same confidence level, or you get a lower confidence level.
Thank you.
Good question.
Any other comments? Seeing none, public comment. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. And the Social Services Transportation Advisory Council did support this action before you, as do I. We should note that 66, can you imagine if any of you had won an election by 66.3%, it would be considered a landslide, a president getting 66.3%. So the public supports this, but obviously didn't quite reach the threshold. Interestingly enough, if you had simply said, trust us, we'll spend it somehow, you could have gotten away with 50%, whether the voters would have supported that, but it's an easier threshold. It's one of the bizarre things about the legacy of Jarvis Gann. In any event, I do support going forward. I kind of question the accuracy of telephone polls. They've tended to favor people with landlines in the past, and I don't know how you deduce the geographic location or voter eligibility of cell phone numbers. And then there are those of us who simply don't have any phones. And I wonder if it's worth exploring, not from the standpoint of coming up with a defensible percentage number, but from the standpoint of simply taking the public's temperature, whether a variety of other venues for surveying, everything from senior centers, gas stations, transit centers, trailheads, etc., whether there might not be a value in simply taking the public's temperature, not in a statistical way, but simply in an information gathering way, what are your priorities? Would you support a measure if it included this, et cetera, et cetera? And simply getting the conversation going, which is probably the most important element. People are usually irritated when someone wants to take their time on the telephone, and you're likely to not be making friends with telephone surveys. But having friendly people in places where people are using various means of transportation just available might break some ice and also bring back some information. Again, I wouldn't want to pretend it was statistically valid, but a lot of the picture we want to get is more nuanced than that, because I think having people ready to advocate because of conversations they've had will be one of our strengths. And SLOCOG itself can't advocate, but SLOCOG can be taking the temperature, and then the public can advocate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board for board discussion and or motion. Mr. Strong.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know if there's any facts that are given during these polls, but it's a sales tax, which means that a majority of that tax is going to be paid by tourists, not by our own people. And if we don't get the money from them, then we have to come up with it or just lose the projects. Loss of the projects might be fine financially, but it means we also lose lives, because these projects save lives. And if you've ever been at a scene of an accident while somebody was dying and screaming, like I have, you'd know how important this really is, because it's nothing you want to go through or ever witness, believe me.
Mayor?
The challenge I have in supporting this is more about putting the tax on itself. And the reason being is I think of the analogy of, you know, putting on your own mask first before helping the person next to you, the oxygen mask. You don't have to write all of this down, by the way, Ida. And what I mean by that is Atascadero has our own tax measure. It is a general measure, but we had a measure in 2014, F14, for a half-cent sales tax, and then we had the advisory measure that went along with it that said, if this passes, would you like us to, you know, put this all to neighborhood local roads? And it was yes. That measure passed with a 12-year term. And so we will need to go out by either 2024 or 2026 to renew this. We had a report last night. We've been able to do 45 miles of roads in 8 years. So it's not that I don't understand the regional need, but again, I come back to needing to take care of my own first. And I know my constituents pretty well. And if we have both sales tax measures on the ballot at the same time, my fear is that Atascadero loses, and that is not good for my constituents. So that has to be my first priority, although I do understand the regional need.
Thank you, Mayor. Supervisor.
These are really important comments. Starting with Mr. Greening's commentary in regards to the kinds of uses that this money would go towards, and those users of that, I think, is a point well taken. Whether or not it's in addition to the telephone, or however the contractor decides to do the polling, but I do think it is something to be considered in addition to. And then in regards to the commentary there, I mean, again, you're talking maintenance of roads and doing things which this doesn't do. This does large projects which help each of our regions, but certainly understanding your position and considering the other aspects that we have in front of us, whether it's other needs with possible increases in revenue tools. So I think at this point, I guess it's really going to be, for me, the language that's used, how it's created to be able to compensate, not compensate, that's not the right word, to be able to comprehend the challenging opportunities that we have that sometimes can be competitive, but also they can also be really enhance the overall regional needs. And so that's the challenge.
I think you're right. It is a challenge. Starting early, where in 2016 we started so late, we jumped in the pool not knowing what was inside the pool. And right now it's not anywhere too late. We're starting early. We're looking at this and what the opportunities are. And I think that a regional measure and a local measure at this stage could work together and be complementary and not be competitive. But by starting early, we can figure that out. Starting late, no, they would probably end up being competitive.
Thank you, and I will be supporting this measure. I think it is timely. I appreciate the early start and the information that we'll get as we have those conversations. And I agree with, I recognize the concern. We had one, you know, if this had gone earlier with an alignment with the city's ask for a sales tax. And I think that that there is some alignment, and the fact that throughout our county, lots of jurisdictions have already had that sales tax, and I think that that's a conversation of adjusting the city to kind of what's being the norm throughout the county and still having a county one, and how much we'll be able to leverage in terms of the having both go at the same time. So I think as a board, if this does go forward, that the couple of cities that may be going after a sales tax, that we can collectively coordinate that communication so as to not be counterproductive. So I certainly relate to that concern and think that the region as a whole will be able to carry this forward, hopefully. So thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Paulding.
Thank you, Chair. I want to echo those concerns, and certainly in the case of looking at the one incorporated area in my district, which is the city of Rio Grande, we're kind of in a similar situation in that the sales tax measure that was on the November ballot failed, so the city may be looking at putting that back on the ballot. So I think we have to address that concern. And I'll just say, though, when we do look at where we are as a region in relation to our surrounding regions, we're way behind. And if we want to get serious as a region working together, the county and the cities, to accomplish some of our regional transportation planning priorities, which we've known and which we carry, we have projects that need funding, and if we're going to get serious, we've got to do this. There is no other alternative, and so I'll be supporting that for this reason, and just hope that we can find a way to address the concerns of the cities. And I know that for example, it could be drafted or crafted in a way that would actually allow more discretion to cities to use funding for road maintenance. So those conversations that would be informed by this initial polling to help facilitate that dialogue between the city management and the county and SLOCOG as an agency are vital, because maybe there's a way for a city, for example, not to go after a measure knowing that this could be the way that they would fund road maintenance, for example, which would be us working together as a coalition as opposed to a bunch of individual measures. So just wanted to put that in the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
One last comment. Thank you, Chair. Yeah. And in the backdrop, we have the climate issues that we're seeing right now. Throughout this county, we have failures of bridges and other aspects of roadways and transportation that are happening and are likely to continue. And I think that that also is something to be put into that language in regards to the polling. And, you know, the safety of our residents is critical. And so, as Fred said, but it's just another thought.
Any further comments? Seeing none, I will not be able to support this today. As we all know, my district, the district I represented last, voted last time overwhelmingly against it, so I'll be representing my district.
That's not quite correct.
Okay.
60% in the North County supervisorial districts, they were supported.
The two districts, but in my district, I don't believe it passed.
It did not pass. But is it 60% support?
Yep, so I'm going to be voting no today, but I appreciate it. So with that, see if there's anybody else here who would like to speak. Seeing none, we'll go to a roll call vote on this item if we have a motion.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
We have a motion. We have a second. Motion and a second. So we'll go for a roll call vote.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Board Member Bright.
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
No.
Board Member Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Board Member Past President Pichon?
No.
Board Member Strong?
Yes.
Board Member Rees?
Yes.
Board Member Wixom?
No.
Vice President Pease?
Yes.
The motion carried.
Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Worthley. We are now moving on to item B3, which is the draft 2023 Slow Clock State and Federal Legislative Platform and Central Coast Coalition. Mr. Rogers, I believe we're having problems today reaching Mr. Corey. Is that correct?
That's correct. Technical problems, well, physical problems in attending today due to the condition of the roads. And so we're recommending deferring this item to the February meeting. And we're welcome to take any comments at this time if you have any. Okay. So that we can incorporate them in February.
So we could move this. So we probably need to do that a motion to move this table this item until the February meeting.
Sure thing.
But I should ask for public comment. I know, Mr. Greening, you had a public comment on this item. So we'll ask for public comment and then see if there's a motion to table it until the next month.
Thank you, Eric Greening. I can go along with tabling it, but I do always have a concern with the surveillance state, with the Fourth Amendment falling out of our Constitution, and as such, I am vehemently opposed to any mileage charge or road use charge that involves surveillance technologies. I understand they're coming up with things like digital license plates now, and one doesn't know in the present atmosphere, the very divided atmosphere of this country, what might be held against one. You know, did you drive to this demonstration, this meeting? Did you go to meet with this group that currently is characterized as a thought crime? I believe it is an issue, obviously, that people who drive electric cars are not paying gas taxes for road upkeep. My solution to this issue would be change the incentive. Instead of paying from all of taxpayers, including non-drivers, collecting money to incentivize the price of buying an electric car, get rid of all that. The incentive is that once you buy it, you're not paying gas tax. That simplifies things on both sides of the equation. And as long as we have a substantial number of people burning fuel, and believe me, we will for quite some time, issues of lithium, cobalt, grid ability, you know, we have a decade or two to find a better way to solve this problem that doesn't bring in surveillance tracking of the populace. We have enough of that anyway. I don't volunteer for it. I don't have a cell phone. Most people do, and maybe they think nothing of it. I still believe every single one of you took an oath to defend the Constitution, and that includes the Fourth Amendment. And so I would seek to, instead of just monitor, I'm glad you're not advocating, but instead of monitoring another advance of the surveillance state in the form of vehicle tracking for mileage purposes, I would urge you to oppose it on constitutional grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Any further public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. See if there's a motion to table until the next meeting.
I move tabling this item until the next meeting.
Great.
A second.
A second. Supervisor Ortiz Legg. Any further comment on the motion? Okay, we'll go to a roll call. We can do a voice vote on that. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Ayes have it. So it will be tabled and we'll be bringing it back, and hopefully Mr. Corey can make it in person at the next meeting. Okay, we have board member comments is the next item I have on my agenda. So is there any board member comments for SLOCOG here? Seeing none, we will close that, and we will adjourn the SLOCOG board meeting. The next scheduled meeting is a special meeting. It's going to be held February 8th, 2023 at 9 a.m. And Supervisor Arnold will reside over that. We're going to now call to order our RTA board meeting. And we will ask our board secretary to conduct a roll call vote of our RTA meeting.
Good morning. It's been a while since I've been board secretary, so thank you for having me this morning. President Arnold. Board Member Bright.
Here.
Board Member Gibson.
Here.
Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Board Member Moreno.
Here.
Board Member Ortiz Lee.
Here.
Board Member Paulding.
Here.
Vice President Pease.
Here.
Past President Pichong.
Here.
Board Member Strong.
Here.
Board Member Reese.
Here.
Board Member Wixom.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, we have quorum, so we'll be moving forward then. Now we go to public comment for items not on the agenda today. So these are items not on the agenda that for the RTA board meeting. Mr. Greening.
Thank you, Eric Greening, and I would like to thank the entire RTA staff for doing what was possible
to get people home when they needed to, and conditions where the mere providing of service called on extra resources of alertness from the drivers and then providing sort of the level of lifeline service that was performed yesterday, and then getting back basically to full service today. I'm sort of counting on that full service. Anyway, I also, again, with the good news from the Census Bureau, a major constraint that has been in your mind relative to labor negotiations has been removed. And I just, knowing how heroic the people out on the road are every day, and also knowing that the best way to address problems of retention and recruitment is to make it a truly generous living for people who put their lives on the line every day to keep us safe, I would urge you to take a great sigh of relief that we don't have to fall into that sinkhole that the Census Bureau might have basically put in the road next to us. And as such, we can actually assess the true value of the people who work for the RTA and hopefully compensate them thusly. So may this inform the labor negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any further public comment? Seeing none, we will close public comment and move on then to the consent agenda item. So see if there is any public comment on consent agenda.
Mr. President,
yes.
If I could mention that under item, let's see here, number A10, declaration of vehicle surplus, South County Transit Support Vehicles. Mm-hmm. That's a minivan that the transmission is defunct, and it would cost more to repair it than it's worth. I have reached out to our partners in the area, and we've had two agencies who would like to obtain that vehicle for parts. So Ride On and Ventura Transit Systems, who operates the Senior Go program, would like to have that vehicle transport or the ability to look at it and possibly have it transferred to their agency.
Thank you, Mr. Straw. With that. Are there any other items on the consent agenda? Nope. So any board questions or comments for staff on the consent agenda? Seeing none. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda, and we will do a roll call vote.
Move approval.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'll
second
it. So we
have a motion by Supervisor Gibson and Mayor Moreno. Now we will go to a roll call vote.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Bright?
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Board Member Ortiz Lay?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Vice President Pease?
Yes.
Past President Pichon?
Yes.
Board Member Strong?
Yes.
Board Member Reese?
Yes.
Board Member Wixom?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Now moving on to informational agenda items. Executive Director's Report, Mr. Straw.
Thank you. First off, Eric has stolen our thunder, and I have reached out to each one of your board members, to you as board members, but also to your finance directors and your county and city executives to let them know that the funding under the 5307 program is going to continue. We were looking at anywhere from a $3 to $3.5 million loss if we'd lost both of those two small urbanized areas. So I just wanted to say that's a great outcome for us. It did change some of the terminology, so you'll hear me no longer say small urbanized area, we'll just say urbanized area. They define the urbanized area as more than 5,000, so the city of Morro Bay, for example, is considered urban, but it doesn't meet the threshold for the $50,000 funding, or 50,000 population that allows the funding through the 5307 program. So there's some terminology change there. The elephant in the room here is we had a big flood, and I'm going to show you a video of from our roof, and this is before the water crested. I do want to say 9 years ago when we purchased the property, you'll remember we went through a lot of different environmental reviews and checks to see if this site would be a problem under a flood, under a 100-year flood. And there are some questions of whether or not this is considered a 100-year flood, or is it a 50-year flood, a 30-year flood. I think there's still some debate over that, but if we can continue that. We already, at this point, we'd already moved the buses from the back end back there. You can see the water has completely overrun our stormwater basin. The water had actually come up to the stairs by the railing there, but it never came into the building. The building was raised about 6 feet to take care of that. You'll see a couple of the cars got swamped there, some of our employee parking. The water jumped, it appears to have jumped the banks from San Luis Creek down by the Elks Lodge, and the water was sheeting towards us from there and also from the from behind DMV. So it came through there. It brought a lot of debris in there. It really tore up our landscaping. I think it's probably going to cost us somewhere on the order of $30,000 to $50,000 for cleanup. We've got a crew of 10 out there today. A contractor, our landscaping company, is there right now, scraping up the silty remains. It's slippery. It's like an ice rink out there. So we still have the buses pulled up on the kind of the higher ground up towards the building. We also had an issue with our Paso Robles parking yard. It's right next to the Salinas River, right by 13th Street. We evacuated those buses. Omar and his folks got them over to the school district parking yard, so we want to thank them as partners for helping us move those vehicles. And you may have seen some of the footage from local news of the helicopter rescue. That happened at our site. They brought people out and dropped them into our parking area up at the Paso Robles bus parking yard. We did a couple rescues with OES. We stood up our Department Operations Center. Worked with OES, the Office of Emergency Services. We helped with some evacuation in Morro Bay, as well as yesterday even some evacuation from SLO to some warming centers in the Five Cities area. So we're happy to be part of this. We shut down services, essentially all the regional services, all the RTA routes 9, 10, 12, and 15 were shut down at about 9 o'clock on Monday when the floods really started hitting us and the road closures began. In fact, we had two drivers stuck in Morro Bay, couldn't get out until much later that evening. But we kept running the South County services, so all the Five Cities area continued with its services until we had some localized flooding that stopped it. We had to stop all the Paso Robles Express services. We did operate the runabout service in the Five Cities area in support of the South County services and in San Luis Obispo for slow transit services. Yesterday at 9 o'clock, we re-implemented service on the regional routes. And we ran essentially a Saturday service. I do want to mention on Monday, we brought people into town. And we needed to get them back, so we announced it through all of our media and on our website that we would do a sweep at 4:30. And so we took a bunch of vans, sent them down to our government center, picked people up, and just took them home on Route 9 and parts of 12. We couldn't get into Morro Bay still.
but we were there to take people up the North Coast. We took them on Route 10 and Route 9 and got people home. Didn't carry a lot of people, but we did get people home, so that was a real concern for some of our riders. This morning, we're back to full service. We still have some local road issues we're dealing with, and certainly some bus stops are swamped as well, but we're working through that right now. So I do want to thank my crew. Omar and his folks did a great job of keeping this going. The Department Operations Center worked really well, we worked with all of our partners, Tascadero Dial-A-Ride, Slow Transit, to make sure we're coordinating services and help if we needed it. So with that, I do want to thank my crew for doing such a great job. Let's go back to the slides, please. So speaking of the facility, the design worked. If you saw that picture there, the water, it jumped the banks of our stormwater two basins. Actually, we have three basins. It jumped all three of those. It jumped the curb, went out to the intersection. There were cars floating through the intersection near the on-ramp onto 101. It was a mess. But what we did worked. I just want to say that, when we were looking at this 9 years ago, we said, there's no way we need to raise this thing 6 feet. But I'm glad we did. We are at the 1 year, the end of the warranty ends next week. We still have some outgoing or sort of ongoing issues with our HVAC system. We did a sort of a symposium where we got the designer and the contractor and the HVAC subcontractor and got everybody there, the commissioning agent. And we think we have a solution. We've already implemented it and we're checking it. I'm working with council on this. We probably will still file a claim so that we can keep this open after the warranty period. But we are working through it. Really, the heat shuts down and it keeps blowing air and it makes it colder and colder and colder. You get down to 58 degrees or something in the office, even lower than that. Then you get down to 52 at one point. So we're all wearing down jackets trying to stay warm. But that's only happened intermittently, and where that's the real challenge is when it happens, we call the subcontractor. They get over there, they measure everything, and they try to figure out what's going on. The high capacity bus recharging is on site. We got it here last month. We hope to have it done by this month, but there's been further delays and our subcontractors being pushed back to the first part of February. Because we don't have any electric buses, we can't plug them in. We've worked with Slow Transit. They're going to bring a bus over. We'll charge it for free for a couple days to make sure everything works well. And so I think it's a good partnership there. Slow Transit has taken receipt of at least one of their two battery electric buses. They're still working through the construction of their fast charging system. So I hope they get theirs up before we can give it to them, but we're still going to work with them to test it out. Next slide, please. I want to thank Shelby, who's filling in today as our board secretary. She's our human resources officer, and she's done an outstanding job of getting staff, hiring new drivers. We're in the best shape we've been in probably 3 years. You've heard me banging the gong here that we've had some real troubles here. We now have no full-time open bids. And we have four part-time bids out of 11 that are open. So we still have some room to go, but we're getting to a point now where we're looking at rebidding some new routes to restore the express services that we got rid of when COVID hit. So we're at that point where demand is coming up. We're going to need to do this pretty soon. So probably in the next couple months, it is budgeted to run the services. There's no need to come back to you for that, but we'll implement those and announce that. Cutaway vans. I had a couple phone calls about what's a cutaway van. Cutaway vans are the runabout style vehicles. It looks like a van in the front. Back in the 70s when they started these things, they would buy a full van. These RV companies cut off the back of it and put a fiberglass body in the back. That name is stuck. Nowadays, you buy a van, your cutaway, where it's just the cab. So anyway, we did issue a PO for those vehicles. As I mentioned before, we had a force majeure claim from the manufacturer. All Ford cutaway chassis have been canceled for 2022, so there's a huge backlog of cutaway buses and also for ambulances. Ambulances are the first priority, so as those are coming back online, they're first in line. This is the first time we are going to a Chevrolet chassis in at least the last 12 years since I've been here. So Chevrolet does have some in order, have some online. So the two buses we're buying are Chevys. Next slide, please. The other low floors, we've talked about before, we have low floor cutaway vans that are going to South County Transit. However, we've talked to the city managers down there. Those vehicles aren't necessary down there. The buses they would be replacing still have some life in them. Route 15 buses have over 400,000 miles on them. They're designed for 150. We're going to put the RBOX on that service first. We'll do a press release when that happens, when they get here. We expect to get those late February, although they were just delayed a week. They were supposed to go online this week. They're going online next week. So we're still expecting them in late February, early March. You've all heard about the supply chain issues. The battery electric buses are really are having trouble too. It's not the batteries. It's the cable ends of what we found out when we went to the manufacturing site. They have these gigantic cables that run from the batteries to the motors, and they can't get the ends, the little terminals. So we still expect to have the vehicles enter the line in July and then to be delivered in August. By that point, our battery electric recharging system will be up. Next slide, please. I'm just going to touch on a couple of these things. We've contracted with a digital marketing agency, a media agency, for strategic promotions to bring back our ridership, to help us bring that back. The other thing I wanted to mention, I mentioned in the staff report that Cuesta College Community College District, I thought they were meeting yesterday. They met last week and already adopted the agreement that we'll talk about in a minute. So that's really good news. Obviously, this flood happened during when they were out of session. They're starting next week. And we already have an agreement with Cuesta College for the first 2 weeks being free for riders. This is just extended for the rest of the year, but we'll talk more about that later. Next slide, please. Oh, I should go back. We are going to do a new brand of the battery electric buses. So we're working with a branding agency to do a different sort of motif on the outside of the bus, so it signifies that it is an electric bus, and we can use it as a marketing effort. Next slide, please. Bus stop improvement plan. We've been working on updating this plan. We're going to have a whole new set of things to do because we had a lot of them damaged here, and we may have to cut some of these buses, bus routes, or bus stops out of service until we can get them back in. That could be weeks in the works here. The other thing is important, and it worked out great. It was this new service alert program. Our dispatchers are now able to do live time updates, and that really helped during this flood. People could go to our website, see what was going on. We would timestamp it so they knew what was new. Next slide, please. This is the transit tracker program. This is the texting program that you go to a bus stop, you text that phone number or the phone number on the sign and the bus stop number, and it tells you the next two buses live when they're going to be there, and you can keep texting it'll give you updates. And we're looking at the number of people using it. It has climbed considerably over the last couple of years. It does go up and down a lot, but there's a lot of them, about a little over 100 a day, which is good news. And I also included our newsletter at the back of the report, just to give you an idea of what's going on otherwise. We have met 7 times with the union for negotiations. We canceled yesterday's meeting because we were still dealing with the emergency, but tomorrow we're going to meet again. During closed session, I'll give you an update of where we are with that. The other issue I wanted to talk about is our insurance, and the report goes into much more detail, but we are expecting our rates to go up between 5 and 15%. Each of your jurisdictions is probably hearing the same thing from your insurance costs. The real big issue here is the fires and the hurricanes fires in the past years, hurricanes this year, two big ones that really are causing property liability, property coverage to go up. This flood is going to hit us too. I've heard today that they think it's somewhere around $1 billion for the California flood so far. I also wanted to mention, we brought this to your board several times. We keep applying for this TRCIP funding, the Transit Intercity Capital Program. We did a sort of a post-mortem where we met with the evaluators, and it turns out they really are looking for additional services, and we can't do that. We don't have the ability to put in new services right now. We don't have the funding availability, so we would not have ranked, as we decided not to resubmit for this cycle six. We do have TRCIP funds that come through SLOCOG on a formula basis, and we will continue to keep asking for some of those funds on a local level. Tanya's on vacation. She and her husband are up in the Yukon right now, so they wanted to see the Northern Lights. But I want to thank her and her team for another clean fiscal and compliance audit. With the consolidation this year, or last year, actually it was the year before, but the first full year with South County, that was something that she did a great job in making sure that consolidation worked out well. The last thing I wanted to mention is on the slide here is we are meeting, we have this Central Coast Age, um, this coast, we call it the coalition. It's a number of transit agencies. We work together on items. We really helped me out when we were going through the COVID issue and how they dealt with it. We are, every year we used to do a annual summit. We hosted it about 6 years ago, I believe. We didn't have live ones during the COVID time. This is the first one we're going to be live again. It's going to be at our facility on January 31st, so we're happy to host that. Audited result, the results are, there's a lot of detail in the report. We are still down about 42% compared to pre-pandemic in terms of ridership on the fixed routes, on the regional fixed route services. The runabout service is climbing faster. And that's the more expensive service, but really a small swings. And if you look at some of the graphs I provide that show the trends, it does go up and down a lot, but it is coming up a little bit faster. And that's always a concern from a cost perspective and a subsidy perspective. So again, the report has some real details on that. In terms of operating costs, again, we're not operating the full services. We're not operating some of those express runs. So that makes our financial results lower than budget. So we're happy about that. The fuel prices are still high. They're coming down. We're all feeling this, but the fact that it is not escalating like it was is really good. We were about it right so far year to date through the end of November. We were $135,000 over budget. On a normal year, we buy about 250,000 gallons of fuel a year. So those swings really hit us pretty hard. But we have seen declines. Farebox recovery issues, I'd get in some detail in the report, but we're still much below where we would be pre-pandemic. We're still looking for relief from the state. I think Gus may have mentioned that it goes through 23, 24. It doesn't. It ends in 22, 23. This is the last year that the moratorium, as far as we could tell, the moratorium on the farebox recovery ratio penalties won't be assessed until 23, 24. So we still have some time to bring some of those numbers up or try to find some relief. Runabout subsidy per passenger trip, I hammer on this every month. It's very high, but it is coming down from where it was before because we're now able to get more than one person on a van at a time. So that really helps us with our productivity. So this is our supervisor group. Great bunch of people. Let me tell you, they did a great job during this emergency. They stepped up. Some of them jumped in vehicles and helped get people around. Did a lot of work sweeping routes to make sure people weren't left behind when we had to shut service down, as well as checking to see the safety of the routes as roads opened up. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Ms. Pease.
Thank you so much. Great report. Always so much going on. In terms of the marketing, I'm wondering if that is a kind of a ride the bus or a ride RTA, or is there a kind of a coordinated effort for increasing transit ridership overall?
Well, that's a great question. We were focusing on RTA services right here, but our marketing manager works very closely with the MORD, and that stands for marketing whatever. It's slow cog has a okay. So marketing outreach and ridership development is a program where all the transit agencies get together at least quarterly and talk about these items. We can certainly, I know Mary talked with them about our efforts to try to do something like this. But if we can do something to help out the other agencies, we will try to make it as generalized as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like being able to have some conversations, and I'd be happy to help facilitate that if needed. So.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Go out to public comment. Oh, Mayor.
Just want to clarify, it's 22-23. This is the last fiscal year that we're in for that farebox recovery. Then you've got the 3 years before you penalize. And
yes.
Yep. Okay. Okay, good. To make sure we had all that clear. Thank you.
Okay. Any public comment? I see Mr. Greening is no longer with us, so I think, but I had him down as a speaker slip for this item. So I will figure that out. We will close public comment, bring it back to the board. And for, yes.
Move to receive and file.
Receive and file. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. We have a second. I don't think we actually need a motion on a receive and file, but we've got one. So we'll just move forward with it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Ayes have it. It is passed. All right, we're moving on to item B2, bus maintenance facility update and the CEQA mitigations first annual monitoring report. Mr. Straw.
Thank you. So your board adopted a environmental policy act that requires us to follow, of course, CEQA, as well as the EPA, the Environmental Protection Act, and the California Environmental Quality Act. Part of the requirement is that we do a five-year update annually on how our mitigations went. So this is our first one for our bus garage, our bus maintenance facility. Your report gets into some pretty big detail on the types of measures that were required as mitigations. There were four pre-construction measures, 10 during construction measures, and only one post-construction operations measure. The pre-construction and the during construction measures were followed. I do mention in the report we had one issue that occurred with some debris that wasn't cleaned up by the contractor. We got right on them, worked with the Water Control Board, the Regional Water Control Board, and took care of that issue, and they changed their best practices to make sure we were on top of that. There's only one post-construction or operations measure, and that has to do with diesel vehicle idling. And we don't operate services in there's no public access to the facility, so we don't have to worry about idling within the and exposing our riders to diesel. But we do have to make sure that there's a state law that says heavy duty vehicles must not idle for more than 5 minutes. The mitigation measure required us to put a sign up, and I think we have a picture of it in the, we finally got this sign, and we posted it over where, by our loading dock where vendors come in and would idle. We instructed our staff to let the trucks, when they do arrive, let them know that it's a requirement, but this is something we hadn't followed through on. So this is the only one that that we hadn't completely done. So for the next four more times, I'm going to tell you that the sign is still up and that we're following our requirements to make sure that there's no diesel idling. Again, there are some exemptions in there. The report goes into some details when we're servicing a vehicle or if we're doing a pre-trip inspection or a post-trip inspection when the vehicle comes back in. We are allowed to go more than the 5 minutes, but this is going to become a moot point, and the more and more we go towards the zero emission vehicles and implement those technologies. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about this this first annual report.
Any questions from the board? No. Seeing none, go to public comment. Do a public comment, close public comment, bring it back to the board. This is a receive and file. So if there's any final comments or questions, thank you very much for that update, Mr. Straw. Moving on next to the next item, which is B3. The ICT rollout plan update.
Okay, this is kind of the next step of where we have been moving towards our zero emission bus technology implementation. Just as a reminder, the California Air Resources Board adopted a innovative clean transit or ICT fleet rule that requires all California transit agencies to transition to zero emission vehicles. And there's a number of different milestones that are identified in the law. We have talked extensively about this over the last few years. The next step for us is that small agencies like us, less than 100 vehicles, must submit its governing board adopted innovative clean transit zero emission bus rollout plan. Now, coincident with that, and that has to be, we have to submit ours by July 1st. The larger agencies had to do it by July 1st last year. So we were able to get copies of their plans and use it to our advantage, which was really helpful. The issue is the bottom line is we have to be zero, we are not allowed to operate internal combustion engines after 2040. So January 1, 2040, we're no longer able to operate a diesel-powered or a gasoline-powered vehicle. There are some other milestones in there. One of them that's important to us is in 2026, 25% of our vehicle purchases must be zero-emission vehicle. We're online. We've planned for that, and we will meet that requirement. The next one is 2029. In 2029, we can no longer buy an internal combustion engine without getting a waiver. So that occurred. That's required for all transit agencies, the 2029 threshold. So our partners at Atascadero Transit, Morro Bay Transit, Slow Transit, all of us have to comply with that rule. The ICT ZEB rollout plan has a total of nine components, and they're listed up here. The report. The next slide, please. I'm pushing the wrong button. Just in terms of milestones and what we've done over the last few years. So again, CARB issued its clean transit rule in 2018 in December. Your board adopted, or we amended our purchasing policy to include a zero emission vehicle purchase policy in March 2019. And then your board accepted the RTA electrification readiness plan and deployment of battery electric buses report, which we presented to your board in April 2019. That was part of the design of the bus maintenance facility. So again, we got ahead of the curve in the design of our facility and to make it so we didn't bring any liquid gas on site and we would transition towards zero emission battery electric buses as we move forward. SLOCOG used our electrification plan to further develop it for the entire region. They developed their regional zero emission bus implementation plan, and your board adopted that in August 2020. And then subsequent to that, the Federal Transit Administration required every transit agency looking to get or to obtain grants, discretionary grants, must have a transition plan, a zero emission transition plan. They recognized in the state of California that the ICT rollout plan was very similar, so they've allowed all of us in California to merely send a letter to them which identifies the steps that they require, all the different elements they require, and they have a couple smaller ones that aren't in there. The plan goes into some details on that. So we go to the next slide, please. Oh, so yeah, you're ahead of me. So the second bullet up here, the address two areas required for the FTA zero emission transition plan, we intend to develop a letter and include that as a Appendix F of this report. I also want to mention that we know in our area that battery electric buses will not work for all of our routes. We figure about 30% of our routes will, there's not a battery electric bus that will likely ever be on the horizon that can get the sort of range that we need out of it. And mentioned this board, we have 13 routes, or 13 blocks, we call them driver blocks. A bus leaves in the morning and comes back. That's a block. We have 13 blocks that are over 300 miles. There's not a bus out there that will ever meet that in the type of environment that we operate. Freeway speeds, which use a lot of juice, and the grade, especially on Route 9, that grade is takes a lot of juice out of that battery. So the notion that a hydrogen fuel cell bus, electric bus, could make that sort of range. And some agencies are already starting to deploy that. Our challenge, and I talk about it in the report, is that we do not have the technical backup in this area. Even for the high, for the diesels that have become a lot cleaner over the years, but they become a lot more complicated, there's not a vendor in this area that can provide warranty. We have to ship buses to Fresno or Bakersfield under warranty when we have these buses break down right now. So unless we can get enough oomph outside of transit, other transportation companies also go to hydrogen, I don't think there's going to be a third-party vendor in this region that is going to support us. So what I've suggested to this board is let's use the battery electric bus as our chosen technology. Let's pursue opportunity charging, in other words, chargers at the layover spots, likely in Paso Robles. So when the vehicle is parked there for a layover time, it can get a little more juice and go throughout the day. So that's the technology that I'm suggesting we do. And it doesn't mean we're saying that in the ICT rollout plan. It doesn't mean we can't amend it and put something else later on if the hydrogen fuel technology can be supported and makes the reliability requirements we need to work in our area. So we're going to include that as an appendix. This is a white paper, so we're ready to go if we need to. But I will say, in our area, we've had clean air. We've never been required by the air district to go to compressed natural gas. That's a natural progression from natural gas to hydrogen because it's a high-pressure fuel. The place I came from was in Davis. We had dirty air. We couldn't buy diesel buses. We were required to go natural gas, and it's 3,600 PSI. That sounds like a lot, but a hydrogen bus is 6 to 10,000. So it's really high pressure, and it takes a lot of juice to do that. Our facility is not designed to provide that much electricity to be able to do that much juice because it takes a lot big, huge motors to compress the hydrogen. So the white paper is going to talk about the hurdles we will have to make the move to hydrogen and at least – after I retire, you look back at me, you're not kicking my name down the road saying this guy didn't think about this and didn't provide this to you. I want to make sure we have that in our toolbox for the future. So our suggestion here is we wanted to bring this to the public, get it out there as a draft, take comments on it. Our plan is to bring the final draft back to your board back in March. For consideration for adoption, and then report back on both what we hear back from CARB on our draft report or on our final report, and then what FTA has to say. And we still have time to address it if we had to before the July deadline. So with that, we're recommending that we receive and provide comment on the draft ICT-ZEB rollout plan and the related FTA zero emission transition plan.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Any questions? Yes, Supervisor.
Yes, I'm curious, and I know you're going to go through this in a meticulous manner, but as far as the commercial fuel suppliers like your neighbor J.B. Doerr, that conversation in regards to hydrogen, have you had that conversation with them, or what's their... There's been other conversations regarding green hydrogen.
Yeah, we have talked with them. They don't have any direct plans right now. Mm-hmm. What a lot of transit agencies are doing, they're basically bringing a skid in, and we've looked at a couple of those. Gold Coast Transit has it, where they just bring a skid. It's basically just this big sort of sled that's got the compressor and the tank and then all the electrical components on it. That would probably be and our white paper will get into that information. We've already started assembling some of this information. Those cost anywhere from $4 to $6 million for a skid. So it's a big investment. The real challenge for us is the cost of hydrogen right now per kilogram is so high compared to any other fuel right now. Most people believe it has to be somewhere between $5 and $7 a kilogram to be equal to diesel, and right now it's $11 to $12, so it's almost twice the cost. There has been talk from the Biden administration to sort of roll some of this out and support the implementation of these of producers nearby. Hydrogen is not only used for fuel. It's used a lot for manufacturing, particularly for steel and other things. It's a way to manufacture steel cleanly and keep them. It's pure, not clean in terms of emissions, but to keep it pure. So my understanding is the nearest user is Vandenberg. Vandenberg uses hydrogen for a lot of different reasons, and there are some manufacturing facilities in Santa Maria that use it as well. It's being trucked in. And when I was in Davis, it was trucked in. We had a truck come in and offload it to our skid, and it was a diesel vehicle, of course, but which is kind of funny. But the hydrogen right now is being delivered as a liquid fuel and then compressed down into a gaseous fuel.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right, I'll go to public comment. Seeing any public comment? Seeing none? Pete's by himself out there in the audience. So you don't want to give public comment, Pete? All right, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Any final questions or thoughts? This is a receive and file, so we can move on from there. All right. Thank you for that. Next, we're going to move on to item C, which is our action agenda. C1, Tanya Arnold is presenting this report live from the Yukon. Is that what you said?
I'm standing in for Tanya today.
Okay, so you'll be filling in,
Yes,
Jeff?
I'll be filling in.
So, Jeff, take it away.
So, again, this is something we bring back to your board every 3 years. It's our Equal Employment Opportunity Plan. One thing I do want to mention is that we have federal requirements for equal employment, and we also have state requirements. This is the FTA, the federal requirements, and it requires us to pursue equal employment opportunity for regardless of race, religion, color, national origin, sex, height, weight, marital status, age or disability as defined in federal law. Again, the state has further protections that we also abide by. So it's important that we follow our EEO plan both for recruitment but also for promotions and for retention. So this is something that Shelby works very closely with and all of our staff, including Omar, who hire people on an ongoing basis. The primary revisions to this plan this year is just an updated it is a workforce utilization analysis. We work very closely with our partners at SLO County and the HR department there to help us through this process. Also for developing employment goals and a timetable for implementation. The report gets into a lot of detail about that, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and maybe I'll even ask Shelby to answer any questions if there's anything else related to that. But our recommendation is to adopt the updated EEO plan and authorize staff to submit it to FDA. I will say there's no real large changes here. I think we've made some strides in our utilization of some of the protected classes. But some of the work we did over the last couple years in diversity, equity, and inclusion help us achieve some of those goals. We want our place to be a welcoming place to work and a supportive place to work. So this just helps sort of codify our efforts. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board? Seeing none, go to public comment. No public comment, so close public comment. Bring it back to the board for discussion and or a motion to move forward.
I'll move the staff recommendation.
All right, thank you for that. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, this is a voice vote, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The ayes have it. Thank you very much for that, Jeff. We're moving on now to item C2, which is the Cuesta Fair Free Agreement.
Okay, thank you. I did mention during my executive director's report that the Cuesta College Community District has adopted the draft as presented. The real issue here is this is a great move forward, and it really is it was a move by Cuesta College to try to enhance its enrollment. They saw a big decline as a result of the pandemic, and this is a way for them to entice folks who otherwise couldn't get to the campus, which is pretty remote, to campus. I also want to mention that we already have an agreement with the Community College District for two things. One is the first 2 weeks of service, we jointly fund the fare-free service for Community College members at the SLO campus. We also have an existing and long-standing agreement with the North Campus to provide fare-free service to anybody in that area. So that's year-round. So this is now making it equal across the two campuses. And I will say that the pre-pandemic, Cuesta College was our number two bus stop in the entire system. Number one was Government Center, and number two was the SLO campus. The agreement, the memorandum of understanding includes and requires an annual review and reevaluation of it. So if we see that the numbers, it's not paying for itself, it's supposed to be a self-sustaining program, it allows us the opportunity to renegotiate or cease the moving forward. So until or unless the agreement is amended, it is an annual year-to-year update to it. The numbers that we identified, and I will say that we've been operating fare-free. We've been getting funding from Cuesta College during the pandemic over the last year for fare-free service. They got some pandemic relief funds that they've used to pay for that. So we've got a good idea about how many people are using it. So we don't think there's going to be a huge rise in the ridership, and it's going to put us in a hole. So this actually should be a good way for us to. We're not going into this blindly. We know that the demand based on the past few months here. It does require that students become a member of the student body. They have to be a student body member and then buy the card. So I think it's $10 a semester or something like that, so they get fare-free service. It's available at all times, not just to the campus. So kind of like with the city's agreement with Cal Poly, those constituents at the Cal Poly campus can ride not just for school purposes, they can ride any time. So I do want to mention, though, this is only for students, and it's not for staff and faculty. That's the difference between the Cal Poly agreement with SLO Transit and RTA's agreement with Cuesta Community College District. So what we're asking for is to authorize me to execute a memorandum of understanding with Cuesta College with the general terms outlined in the attached draft MOU and report back to the RTA board after the authorized college official has executed agreement. They were authorized to do it, but they haven't signed it yet and sent it over to us, is my understanding. So.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Any questions? Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, so the students can ride feet on any RTA, and I'm assuming South County Transit and Slow Transit as well? Are they?
No, just South County Transit, Paso Express, control, which is already covered. But now people in Paso can ride all the way down to the Slow campus, which has been a real need for that campus. It does not include Slow Transit, does not include Atascadero Transit or Morro Bay Transit.
Thank you.
Ms. Pease.
And the
only for those routes, specified routes.
I think it has the listing in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, routes 9, 10, 12, 14, 15.
Yeah.
It's all routes.
All routes.
Yeah, all routes operated by RTA.
And do the students, how is that being tracked in terms of, do students swipe a card and so that's how the, or do the drivers manually have to track when a student uses it?
Yeah, so the drivers have we call it a mobile data terminal. They push a button that says it's questing. We're doing that now already. Okay. for the first 2 weeks. So we've already been tracking this.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has Cuesta ever broached the question of staff and faculty? Or have we?
I know we've heard from some staff and faculty who have asked for that.
I mean, I think just in terms of getting vehicles off the road, I mean, the whole operations center near Cuesta County Ops Center and Cuesta might be a market. Talk about an employee benefit. Just as you continue that conversation, might be interesting.
We've relayed that to them, that we've fielded questions from staff and faculty.
Okay. All right. Seeing no other questions from the board, public comment. Seeing no public comment, we'll close public comment. Bring it back to the board for any additional comments and or a motion to approve.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Have a motion?
I'll second.
We'll go with Ms. Pease as a second. And this is a roll call vote, so we'll ask for a roll call.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President Pease?
Yes.
Board Member Bright?
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Ortiz-Legge?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Past President Pichon?
Yes.
Board Member Strong?
Yes.
Board Member Reese?
Yes.
Board Member Wixom?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So now we get to go to closed session items, the Executive Director Performance Evaluation, and also I think there's a labor discussion today. So we will go to closed session and then we will come back to report anything out from closed session after that's concluded.
Do you want to open up to public comment first?
Is there any public comment for closed session? Seeing none, I will close public comment for closed session and we will go into closed session. Broadcast all this incredible news that's coming out of this closed session.
Ready to go.
We're ready? Okay, thank you. We're back in session and ask council to report out of closed session.
So, President, no reportable action.
No reportable action out of that. So we're going to go to board member comments and see if there's any further comments from any of the board members today. Seeing none, we will adjourn, but let you know that the next regularly scheduled RTA board meeting is on March 1st, 2023, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much for everybody's time.
Thank you.